Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva, and alongside me, as always, is Mr. Chad Captain America Riley.
Yeah, I am.
And with us, don't... on the other side...
It's the best honorific you've ever given me.
You're welcome. We got with us Spencer... Winter Soldier, William.
Why Bucky?
Spencer, we're besties.
For the resties.
Okay, but like at the same time, that also means I'm a murderer who killed a whole bunch of people who didn't deserve it.
But well, it wasn't your fault.
I was going to say, if people have seen Spencer, they would understand that.
Whoa.
We got a great show in store as we are talking about the film that has been the culmination of our lives for the last 10 years, and that is Avengers Endgame.
Finally.
So we are excited to finally talk about it. We're going to get into that. But before we do, Chad, give him them opening credits.
All right, like a time-traveling trip down memory lane, the Filmlosophers podcast reminds loyal listeners that we're brought to you in snappy fashion by Mingle Media TV and VGB Studios. Also, just when you think that all is lost and gone forever, we're back every Wednesday morning with new episodes.
Oh, snap.
You'll find us on your left on Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, Libsyn, Player FM, Stitcher, and Audio Boom. Oh, and Spencer, where can they find more information?
Now that you've probably seen Endgame at least once, we'll bet you feel like you've come back to reality after spending quite a long time in a cool, dark place full of foreboding. Join the rest of the Undusted by connecting with us on Facebook at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter at twitter.com/philosophy101. Filmlosso fans, assemble!
Oh my gosh, yes! I raised my fist.
This isn't even our studio. We're going to break the microphones.
And listen to any or all of our 160 episodes on our website, filmlosophers.com.
That's right. We got a website, and we are glad to have over 160 episodes. This being the 160th episode, and whatever movie is more fitting to place this, that honorific role, the grand placement on our shelf of conversations about movies, other than this one right here. Ladies and gentlemen, we are talking about Marvel's Avengers Endgame. We are finally going to talk about it, guys.
And it's going to have lots of content. I mean, this is a spoiler review.
It is a spoiler review.
We are talking about anything and everything. And with 3 hours and 5 minutes of movie to talk about, you know that there's a lot of any and everything.
We're going to try to keep this to a certain amount of time length, but we do have a lot to talk about. So before we jump into the film, Chad, give him that official synopsis goodness.
The grave course of events set in motion by Thanos that wiped out half the universe and fractured the Avengers ranks compels the remaining Avengers to take one final stand in Marvel Studios' grand conclusion to 22 films, Avengers Endgame.
That's right, man. A lot of... Directed by Joe and Anthony Russo, the film features an ensemble cast including Robert Downey Jr., Chris Evans, Mark Ruffalo, Chris Hemsworth, Scarlett Johansson, Jeremy Renner, Don Cheadle, Paul Rudd, Brie Larson, Karen Gilliam, Danai Gurira, Bradley Cooper, and Josh Brolin. This is like so, like this music is just...
Eddie's having all the feels right now.
All the feels.
If you haven't seen the movie, just be advised, number one, we're going to talk about everything.
Yes.
And this particular track comes in very late in the film. Like,
yes.
As in like the beginning of the epilogue. I mean, it's like a multi-ending on par with Return of the King from the Lord of the Rings series.
Mm-hmm.
There are like multiple endings, and this track comes from essentially the first of the multiple endings.
Yeah.
And not multiple as in like multiple choice. Like there are several steps to wrapping things up.
Very true. This being the 22nd film to be released by Marvel Studios for the Marvel Cinematic Universe, Endgame also marks Chapter 10 of Phase 3, which is pretty incredible seeing as this film pretty much caps off what we have been discussing and just overhyping and going nuts over for the last, ever since it was announced, in all honesty, and ever since we finally got our first taste with the teaser trailer, on this podcast. Like, we have been, this is our Super Bowl, essentially. Like, in all honesty,
sure.
This is clearly and easily our Super Bowl of what we've been waiting for, that final match between all that is good and the ultimate evil of this universe. Avengers Endgame became the biggest pre-sale title ever on Fandango and Atom ticket sites, causing them to actually crash minutes after the sale was announced. Some theaters across the world had so many sold-out showtimes on the opening weekend that Cinemark, Regal, and AMC chose to add new overnight screenings so that they would be working around the clock to accommodate extra shows. I think Spencer was the one who had mentioned, because Spencer, among being our resident expert on all things great, he is also our individual who gets our tickets as well for some movies when we have to go to an actual regular screening as opposed to like a press screening or something. And so you were actually mentioning about how this the site actually crashed while you were trying to get tickets.
Oh, it was a nightmare. And I was like, so if anyone was up at like 5 to 6 a.m., I was there with you feeling your pain on these websites. It was ridiculous what I had to do. I have the, not sponsored, but Cinemark Movie Club. So the best way to get those are through their website, but their website was garbage. So what I had to do was go to Fandango, look at their site to see which showtime still had seats available, and then slowly make my way there on the Cinemark website. So I was multi-tabbing, and it took me like 45 minutes to get like some good tickets.
Eddie and I actually had like a text message play-by-play from Spencer, yes, while Spencer was arranging everything.
That is very true. Because we actually were watching, all the information coming down online, and then Spencer was like, "I'm trying to get tickets, and this is not making sense." And so we're like, Spencer, well, why don't we go to Regal over here near where we live?
No.
Exactly.
Spencer's boycotted the local theater.
No, exactly.
I am a tall man, and they are not.
Spencer
seats for
is
tall
a tall
men.
Drink of water. That is what he's saying. That is what I'm hearing. Spencer is putting himself out to
honestly,
the Philosophy Universe.
My favorite. I don't know. I'm stumbling into this. My favorite moment of the play-by-play was when Spencer said, "Wait a minute, guys, half the seats just disappeared." And we said, "Well, what did you expect?"
That was actually someone's advertisement for selling seats. They're like, "Get them before they're gone," and just half the seats
fade. Well, I don't know if you guys read any of the news reports, but like there was ridiculousness when it came out to the tickets that people were buying. People weren't buying the tickets to go. A lot of the people weren't buying the tickets to go see it themselves. They were buying it so that they could resell them out,
yep,
at ridiculous prices.
Yep.
eBay was reporting that there were people who were selling tickets in the highest of numbers, in around thousands. Somebody sold a pair of IMAX tickets opening night for $15,000.
Makes sense.
No, that doesn't make sense.
No, that's exactly what's going to happen. This movie is the most hyped movie, like, within recent memory. So,
yeah,
of course, people are going to try to get those premium seats and then sell them for an extra premium. That's what people always do.
It's true. And mind you, yes, we are one of those people who like to see it opening night. We actually see it multiple times on opening night, especially when it comes to a movie like this.
Totally.
Where we've been following either the marketing of the film for so much time, or in this case, the story that has been progressing over the past 10 years. We are one of those people who we try to buy tickets opening night, or at least opening weekend, and we support it. Like, in all honesty, if it's a movie that we're going to enjoy and we know it already, our plan is already to watch it several times through the course of the weekend.
Well, and I think especially when it comes to something like this, I mean, this is just, we've never seen anything like this.
Yeah.
In terms of the whole cinematic universe and all of it. I mean, 22 films in, and it's the culmination, the closeout slash transition to a totally new mode, and what, like, we've, cinema has never had something like this before, and we know that they're at 3 hours and 5 minutes long. There are going to be things that we miss, so we plan on seeing it multiple times because we want to do our due diligence. Well, we're fanboys first, so we just want to see it repeatedly. Yeah. But then also we want to do our due diligence when it comes to sharing our thoughts and remembering things accurately when there's so much information thrown at you.
Yeah.
So we see it multiple times to make sure that we're not going to report anything erroneous.
Of course. And mind you, also to the fact that credit goes to where credit is due, and the filmmakers on this, you know, particular project, you know, the Russo brothers, as well as the cast, they deserve every bit of the money that is going to them for this film as possible, because the investment that they've had in all these films, the time that they've spent over the past 10 years, 22 films, they may not have been in every single one of them, but their character was a part of that universe. And so being so well invested and so well tied to this, and not choosing to, you know, duck out after like the first film, you know, not pointing fingers, Terrence Howard, Edward Norton.
Edward Norton.
But the fact is that they're still in it. And
totally.
It's so amazing to see that type of commitment, and you have to honor that. You have to show that type of appreciation, especially as a moviegoer. I mean, yes, The House of Mouse is a huge powerhouse. They are hand over fist making tons of money off of this film, as well as other properties that they have currently gearing up to be released in theaters. But that doesn't take away from the quality that they're
showing. Totally.
With
the
world.
This is not something that was just like stuck in a blender, churn out by a formula, and dump it, you know, on people's laps and say, pay money to see it. It's far, far more than that. And just in terms of its size, I was reading earlier today on CBR.com, which is Comic Book Resources.
Yeah.
They did a tally of all the records that Endgame broke in its opening weekend. It's like 2 dozen records that it nailed, because, I mean, it's got biggest domestic opening of all time, biggest international opening of all time, biggest worldwide opening of all time. Largest Thursday opening, largest single day grosses for every single day that it was, that amounts to the weekend, biggest opening of all time in multiple different individual markets all around the world, fastest to a billion, widest release, meaning it was in more theaters than any movie has ever been in.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And biggest theater averages, biggest 4DX opening, biggest 3D opening, biggest IMAX opening, biggest PG-13 opening. I mean, the list is exhaustive and incredible.
Yeah. And in talking about facts, going over numbers just real quick, the budget for this film was estimated at $356 million, which, mind you, to most other films, that seems pretty large.
That's gargantuan. It's way, way huge.
It is. But in its opening weekend alone, domestically, this film made $357 million. Making it obviously the number one in the weekend, and as Chad had mentioned, breaking so many records that it just smashed this past weekend. Worldwide totals, as of today, it has already grossed over $1.3 billion.
Yeah, so as of today, it hasn't even been out a week yet, right?
No, it's barely been it's barely been out, what, 3-4 days? Five days if you include Thursday night.
Well, a little bit longer in China, because China kind of led the global market here with their biggest opening ever for Avengers Endgame. And I believe I read something right before we started recording, because it's already Wednesday in China while we're recording for Tuesday. A Wednesday morning episode. And it was already, I think, its biggest Wednesday theater like income tally, like as we speak. It's already like making even more bank right now.
That's hilarious, especially when you know that there are movies that debut on Wednesday. Mm-hmm. So to hear that, it's
huge.
So needless to say, this movie is taking the world by storm, breaker, and so it's sorry
cute.
And there are a lot of people who are seeing it. And like I said, we got a chance to see it multiple times. And we're just excited to really just jump into this. So kind of talking about it a little bit, we've already gone over so many different expectations. That is one thing that we've done to the excess for this film. If you want to know our expectations, just check out, honestly, the last few episodes, because we've ended up talking about it at some point in time. But my bigger question to you guys, how did you guys, like, how hard was it for you guys to stay spoiler-free before this movie? Because, in all honesty, there was so much leaking about this movie. It was ridiculous. Like, you couldn't even go on. I have a niece, and she's on this app called TikTok. So I don't know if most of you guys are familiar with that.
Yeah.
But TikTok is kind of like Vine. It's just for modern day. And essentially, there was somebody who had posted a TikTok of him doing a silly dance, and then he picks up a piece of paper, and he reveals this huge spoiler in the movie at the end of the TikTok. And I'm like, what kind of garbage is this that you have to police now things like TikTok from giving away spoilers to movies? Nothing was safe.
It's not TikTok's fault.
Oh, no. I don't blame TikTok. I blame the people who are on TikTok, in all honesty. But like, how well did you guys stay spoiler-free before coming into the movie?
I was pretty... I would say probably 96% spoiler free, minus things like, you know, it's long been rumored that time travel's involved because there were set photos of actors in older costumes. Mm-hmm. So there were certain things that turned out to be true in the long run. But in terms of actual confirmed content from the finished movie, probably 96% spoiler free when we saw it on Thursday evening.
Yeah. I remember when, that news report came out of, like, someone leaked, like, part of the video, and I was like, nope, we're done. I'm not, we're not doing anything anymore.
I think off of the internet.
I think Spencer, I think actually, going back to previous episodes, last episode, I think Spencer said he's going to stay off social media from here moving forward, and I'm like, it's interesting that we're broadcasting a show squaring off of the internet, and we utilize the internet to broadcast our episodes. So
that's true.
Stay away from everything else but us.
Although, truth be told, we recorded that episode on a Tuesday evening and had to stay off of the internet for less than 48 hours before then seeing the movie on a Thursday
evening.
It was
not super hard.
But even then, things like that, I mean, finding, like, I don't know exactly when that TikTok video was released, but I just happened to spend the last weekend with my family, and that's when my niece was like, oh, yeah, I saw that so-and-so, this and this happens in the movie. And I'm like, oh.
Oh, no, you don't. You need to, no.
Yeah, and I'm like, where did you hear that from?
The chunkla needs to come out. You got to teach your niece something, because that's not okay.
Well,
to just throw a spoiler out there like that. She knew it was wrong.
Thankfully, it was just her and I at the house, since everyone else went to go grab some ice cream.
Doesn't make it right.
Was there any
how spoiler free would you say you were then, Eddie?
Oh, I was trying to be as so. Here's the thing: normally with most Marvel films,
I mean, your niece ruined something for you.
Oh no! This was after the fact. Thankfully, we had already seen it.
Oh good.
We had already seen it Thursday, and then we saw it Friday, and then I helped them move some stuff on Saturday. So this was already after the fact, I would have laid the smackdown on her, like old school, The Rock style, like. Raised eyebrow and thrown my sunglasses and dropped the people's elbow or whatever. Everything else in between. But no, this was after the fact. I tried to stay as spoiler-free as possible because of the fact that there was so much into the marketing that was already ingrained of having the fans honor the wishes of the creators of the film.
Hashtag don't spoil the end game.
Yeah.
Thanos demands your silence.
Well, and see, they did that last time for Infinity War, mm-hmm. and that was cool. But this time, it was like they upped it a bit more because of the fact that they heard someone had leaked this, leaked footage, leaked information, and they're like, yeah, come on, guys, don't ruin it. Even Josh Brolin, the performer who plays Thanos, got in on this, and on his social media was like, come on, don't be that type of person. Just don't. Don't spoil it for people.
And now that we've seen the movie three times, five times, however many times each.
Collectively.
We're going to spoil.
Yes.
The end game.
So.
So we have stalled enough for time. If you've not seen it and you care, just pause.
Oh, no. The people who care.
Spend 3 hours in the theater and come back.
Would not have even clicked on this. Because, like, I was like, I met up with, like, some friends over the weekend. And I was like, who saw Endgame? And I was like, just turned to it. It's like, do not say anything. Don't even tell us if you liked it. Tell us nothing. And I'm like, fine. I look forward to possibly maybe liking or not liking the movie with you.
Well, and it's insane. I mean,
how very non-committal of you.
Like, there are people who are truly serious about that. Mind you, nobody likes getting anything spoiled for them or ruined. You ruin a whole experience for people. But you had mentioned China earlier, and there was a guy who was right outside the theater who was spoiling key plot points for the film for people who hadn't even gotten into the theater yet. And he got his butt whooped.
Yep, they beat him up.
Yeah, I'm not one for violence, but he kind of
They beat him up. You should know better.
Yeah, come on.
You
like,
should know
really,
better.
Yeah. So... yes, we are going to have a spoiler-filled discussion, but we are warning you ahead of time. Spoilers will ensue. We plan to not hold back anything. Everything is on the table. And if you have not seen it yet, you can put a pause here, put a pin in it, go check it out, and come back to us. So starting out, as the film opens up, obviously it opens a few... it's like 20 days or so much... 21 days after the events of Infinity War. It's not very long. It's like a few weeks, in all honesty. And... everybody's still reeling from what had happened, and they're ultimately looking for Thanos, and they find that Thanos uses his power on the other side of the world.
Other side of the galaxy.
Yeah.
Yeah. On the other side of the galaxy. I'm sorry. I'm still getting used
he's
to the...
He's not still on Earth.
He's
well,
not.
Well, and it's interesting because one of the things that we heard a lot about as audiences have wisened up to the marketing behind these films is, hey, the trailers for these movies have been intentionally altered to keep people from knowing some of the actual components. And very early on here, one of the key differences that we see is we, in the teaser from what the Super Bowl or whatever it was, we saw Tony Stark sending a message to Pepper Potts, Gwyneth Paltrow's character, through his damaged Iron Man helmet.
Mm-hmm.
And he looked normal from what we could see in the way that the footage was displayed. In the actual finished product movie, he is emaciated.
Yeah.
He's gaunt. He is on the verge of death when he leaves that message.
Yeah.
So there have been alterations even to what was in the marketing before the movie released.
Okay, but we had that kind of problem last time with Infinity War.
Totally.
So, like, if people want to scream fake news about Marvel trailers, I'll believe it because, like, I don't trust them.
I forgot that we have one of the most the biggest cynical person towards Marvel trailers on this table
they
right now.
They took out extra Infinity Stones from Thanos' gauntlet in Infinity War.
What?
Like, because
in Infinity War, when Captain America...
Yeah.
Oh, you're right, you're
tangoed
right.
with him in the trailer, the gauntlet wasn't full of stones.
Right.
Yeah.
Spencer, it's all fake. It's just a movie. It's okay.
Okay, but, like, I have never been lied to in a trailer before. Like, that would never be allowed anywhere else.
Marvel is that really cool uncle who just doesn't want you to tag along, but he makes up a really good story so that you don't have to worry about going.
What?
So, that's right.
There's a lot to follow.
I'm concerned.
I have a very interesting family. What Chad was mentioning, though, that's actually prior to the scene that we were talking about. Him and Nebula are drifting off into space, which is where we get the time reference because he says it's been 21 days or 23 days.
23 days,
since they've been drifting off into space. And they're ultimately last minute saved by this big bright light that just happens to be
the cosmic savior.
The cosmic savior, the Wonder Woman herself for Marvel, Captain Marvel.
Captain Marvel.
Which, convenient enough, like, hey, I was just passing through and wanted to come.
No, she was sent out to look for them.
It's true, because and I was wondering if that scene was going to be in this film, but the scene at the end of Infinity
Marvel.
War. Captain Marvel. You're right. The scene that was at the end of...
she shows up out of nowhere from the pager turning off.
Yeah. And that's probably the scene that's supposed to connect right at the end of that.
Totally.
Right up at the beginning of Endgame. So he's essentially saved, him and Nebula. Brie Larson's Captain Marvel takes the ship all the way back to Earth. And then they have the conversation about going to find Thanos because he used the gauntlet one more time for some reason. And the power energy surge, whatever, showed off in this planet on the other side of the galaxy. Ultimately, the Avengers, what's left of them, including Captain Marvel, go back along with Nebula.
Rocket.
Including Rocket.
A survivor of the Guardians.
That's right. Well, actually, the only
galaxy
survivor.
Well, depends on if Nebula was kind of with them or not yet.
Very true.
Because there's also been a time jump with them. Like, yes. By the time you see them in Infinity War, there's been quite a bit of time that has passed between the end of Volume 2, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, and the beginning of Infinity War. So any number of things could have happened there as well.
So ultimately, we see them find the source of this. They actually take all the Avengers into space on the Milano 2, right? I believe it's
The Benatar.
The Benatar, yeah. That's right. They take them on their ship. And they're like, oh, who hasn't been to space before? And obviously all the Avengers who haven't, you know, Cap, Don Cheadle's Rhodes, Rhodey, Natasha, I believe that's it.
And Hawkeye.
And Hawkeye. No, Hawkeye's
not
with
No, he's not with
No.
Yeah, no, he is. No, he's not.
No.
Not at that point.
No.
Gosh, I'm lost.
So essentially they go find Thanos. They, you know, pretty much interrogate him. They beat him. They hold him into submission and ask him where he put the word.
Well, and one of the things that's interesting before finding Thanos and all that, they actually released most of that sequence, the planning scene on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was Jimmy Kimmel or whatever. Like they released most of it. So you got a real sense of like just how gutsy Captain Marvel is, because she's like waltzing out right after they have rescued Tony Stark.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, where are you going? And she goes, to kill Thanos. Like just very matter of fact. Like, I'm going to take care of this.
Yeah.
And then the rest of them sort of are like, wait, hold on. Like, what do you mean?
This is also our fight, too. Hold
and
your slow roll.
They plan to do exactly that. Captain America endorses it. Black Widow is like, hey, we owe it to everybody who's not in this room to try and all that. We've seen some of the quotables before, but most of that kind of group planning scene was released about a week before the movie.
Yeah.
You know, it was like, wow, how early does this scene happen? Well, right away.
Right
like
away.
Start to finish, the first, I would really call it a prologue. I wouldn't even say it's
the
first act. The let's find out where Thanos went and figure out how to undo what he did, part one.
Yeah.
That prologue takes, what, 30 minutes?
Yeah.
If at that.
Max? 25?
Yeah. It's not very long. Mm-mm. And it's very matter of fact. Like, they find Thanos. Thanos used the stones to destroy the stones. Thor goes for the head, chops it off. End of that whole scenario.
After you get, like, one of the main lines of the movie.
That's right.
I am inevitable.
Yes.
Thanos.
The running.
Like, just, that's total baller dialogue right
oh,
there.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that is incredible writing.
Well, and even before that, before they actually jump, and mind you, we should have mentioned this earlier, before they jump onto the ship, there is a little bit of a confrontation between, well, not a little bit, there is a confrontation between Tony Stark and Steve Rogers after Tony is sitting in a wheelchair, emaciated, very frail looking, which is really scary. Like, you could almost look at him and think, like, oh my gosh, this is what would happen if Robert Downey Jr. did not take care of himself and was very, very, very sick.
Yeah.
Like, it looked really good, which they probably use the same. It's interesting. They use the same technology that they did for Captain America, the first Avenger, in making him small mm-hmm. and frail. But ultimately, Tony reminds him of, like, the conversation they had when they were talking during Age of Ultron. And, like, you know, let's put an iron suit around the world and, you know, we wanted to do this and you said we would be together and you weren't there and he ultimately grabs the little thing that's on his chest and he hands it to Captain America and he's like, here, it's like, next time he comes, you take this, you put it on and you run, and then he collapses. But it's a very emotional scene because you kind of see...
Yeah, it's super emotional.
You see, like, Robert Downey Jr., Tony Stark really kind of just giving up that whole mantle of, like, I don't want to do this. I got whooped.
Yeah, he's totally traumatized, scared, angry.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, he has that whole, like, he looks at Steve and just quietly, liar. You know, like,
oh, yeah.
Just vicious. Like,
yeah.
There's animosity in his tone, and mm-hmm. it's not pretty to watch.
Mm-mm.
No. And so, ultimately, this is, like Chad said, that's pretty much just the prologue of this bad boy, because this, after all that ends and they chop off Thanos' head and they're just all standing there, it then fades to black. And then on the screen, it takes its time to reveal how much time has passed, and it says on there 5 years later. And everybody in our theater, when me and Chad saw it, just gasped, like,
like it was a physical reaction.
Yeah.
Because I don't think most people were expecting, like, oh, we're going to stay here for 5 years. Like, this is like, you know, the good guys win and, like, should fix it, like, within a couple of days type of scenario. So the fact that people had to live without, like, 50% of everything for, like, 5 years is wild.
Yeah.
So we catch up with what's going on with Natasha. Natasha's essentially taking over S.H.I.E.L.D. or what's left of S.H.I.E.L.D. or the Avengers.
The Avengers, yeah. She's, like, mission control, kind of.
She's got Captain Marvel on, like, those viewing comms where you can see people's, like, holograms. You got Captain Marvel, Rhodes, you got Nebula and Rocket, and you have Okoye. And one of the great little Easter eggs in there is, you know, there's issues with the tectonic plates under the Atlantic Ocean, and she's like, well, how are we handling it? And Okoye's like, we handle it by not handling it. I'm like, huh. Little nod to Namor. Isn't that the...
Totally.
That's the
yeah. You thought
of Namor.
The Captain Marvel was like snooty and full of herself and arrogant. Wait until you meet Namor.
Oh yeah,
Namor is like the definition of arrogant most of the time.
Well, and isn't there like because I believe you're the one who had mentioned that Namor and Black Panther have this like constant running rivalry with each other, even though they're not.
Yeah, it hasn't always been there, but recently. One of the things that is true in the comics universe is that Wakanda and Atlantis have almost virtually gone to war with each other.
Oh, really?
On at least one major occasion, possibly two. And yeah, so there's bad blood between them.
Yeah.
I think that's a more modern take on the characters. They haven't interacted over much historically, but yeah, it'll be there. I think that'll be in the subtext from Jump once Atlantis shows up.
Well, as
the MCU version of Atlantis, I guess you should say.
You mean no talking underwater and, you know, Jason Momoa, none of that shows up.
No. No.
So we eventually get them like just discussing what's going on in their areas. They're talking about taking care of it. And then eventually Natasha finds out that Clint, who is Hawkeye, which at the beginning of the film, you do see...
I was going to say, we didn't even touch on the actual pre-logo opening of this movie.
That's right. At the very, very beginning, the scene that you see at the more recent trailer where you see Clint teaching his daughter how to shoot a bow and arrow...
Which she aces.
She does, right at the target, which I don't know if you guys know, but that is actually Anthony Russo's daughter.
Oh.
So the actress who plays the yeah. But you get this whole sequence of, obviously, he's on his property. He's under house arrest, much like Ant-Man. And they're there, and he turns around 1 second to go and grab the arrow off of the target and turns around and is like, oh, yeah, we'll be right there. He turns back around to see where his daughter is. She's gone. You just see the remnants of dust floating. And then he looks to his right, and he sees nothing of his wife and his kids, his boys. And you just see dust floating, and he's looking around. He's frantic. So essentially, he loses everybody, which is what everybody had expected. He was going to lose everybody and become one of the characters that a lot of people know in the comic books from the more recent series, the more recent runs, as Ronan. Not to be confused with Ronan the Accuser, but Ronan, R-O-N-I-N.
Yeah.
Because Ronan the Accuser is R-O-N-A-N.
Clear as mud.
There we go. Thanks.
Clint is not an alien.
He is not an alien. So, ultimately, we get this follow-up where Rhodey and Natasha are having this conversation about, oh, you know, Clint, you know, is out there still doing this. He's killing people. He's killing cartels. He's leaving a blood trail and blah, blah, blah. And so ultimately, Natasha's like, just let me know where he's going next, and that's it. All the while, you got Scott, who apparently has been still stuck in the quantum realm, gets released by a rat who happens to wander across the controls.
Yeah, that was pretty funny.
The rat that saved the Marvel Universe.
Exactly.
I like that angle, Spencer.
The rat that saved the Marvel Universe. You see Scott trying to pick up the pieces and figure out what had happened to the world, because it looks like an apocalypse wasteland somewhat in most of the neighborhoods. Everything looks overturned. There's stuff that's dead in terms of grass and trees, and just everything looks
just
like
unoccupied property, unoccupied cars, all of it. He stumbles upon then a very large series of monuments in San Francisco that has names of people who were dusted.
Yeah.
And he's frantically searching for his daughter's name to see if she,
she appears.
If whatever happened to everybody else happened to her, and he finds his own name instead. And then runs back to the house to see if she's still there.
Yeah.
Which she is. It's a very touching scene. One of the things that really stuck out, especially by this moment, it really was there from the pre-logo beginning with Hawkeye and his family, but the theme of family and how much family matters is all over this movie. It's extremely poignant, very relatable, and beautiful as in terms of a creative decision-making step to not just go for the spectacle. Like, they're going to get back at Thanos and they're going to bring people back and we're going to be better. And like, totally all those things may happen, but first and foremost, let's ground it in reality. Something that anyone hopefully is able to relate to at some level, even if you consider your family not to be your birth family, but like, you know, the friends that you've made or whatever.
Yeah.
But that theme, that refrain of family, is all throughout this movie, and it's a gorgeous choice. And you kind of really get a strong sense that this is going to be something that gets punctuated, you know, throughout the entire 3-hour runtime when Scott and Cassie embrace on the front porch.
Yeah.
Because she, of course, has grown up, because she's had 5 more years of life that for him was 5 hours.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And ultimately, this movie begins to pick up the pace as soon as Scott meets back up with Natasha and Captain America, who happen to both be at the compound at the same time. The scene that actually was released, where he's waving at the... It was actually at the end of the trailer, where he's waving and Cap is like, oh, you know, is this old footage? And he's like, she's like, no, that's actually at the front door right now. And so that kind of kickstarts the conversation about the possibility of how to remedy what has happened with the world. And they end up talking about time travel. So if anybody's been wondering about what is the method of how it's supposed to happen, it is time travel. We are it's confirmed.
I am so shocked.
Shock and awe.
I had no idea.
But this is at the point where the film just begins to take off, and everything that is in the film, all the high speed, high action parts pretty much kick off from here moving forward. Mm-hmm. So kind of just really quick talking about some key players and whatnot, because we could go through the entire movie and play by play it the entire time, but that would take a long time. And we only have an hour and so much time. But ultimately, you get a lot of great parts. One of the funniest parts, because you get all the Avengers that were there after the snap. You got Tony Stark, who has at this point had a family with Pepper. You find out that he had a little girl, and he wants nothing to do with changing the past. Like, he is fine. He even tells him, like, your idea, don't bring that to me. If you want to stick around for lunch, we don't talk shop, but I'm happy with where I'm at. And which is kind of a shock, because he's been the biggest proponent for saving the world. And going back to which we talked about Iron Man 1 in the last episode, he's talked about, like, there's nothing else. It's the mission. That's it.
Totally.
And to have him come back around and be like, no, I'm good. I'm happy. I don't want to change this. This is the life for me.
Yeah, this is my second chance right here.
Oh, that's exactly what he tells
his line. And I think another really smart thing they did was essentially the plan, the time travel plan comes from Scott, Ant-Man,
Yeah,
Paul Rudd's character, and he is a thief. Scott Lang is a thief. Ever since the beginning, before the beginning of his first movie, yeah, we've known that, and his plan is
time heist.
Yeah,
he calls it a time heist. That's funny.
It's so authentic to the way that that character's mind even works.
Yeah,
I thought that was a brilliant touch to even call it that, and then of course, like you mentioned, Tony's having none of it because he has his second chance right there. He has his family. He doesn't want to lose it.
Yeah. And so, ultimately, because Tony denies having any involvement, Cap says, we just got to go and find a bigger brain. And they go and see Professor Hulk, which he is Professor Hulk at this point. Bruce has figured out a way for him to balance being the Hulk as well as being Bruce. And he's like this more confident, like, green Lou Ferrigno who's welcoming to everybody and... He's just like, oh, yeah, come on.
He's super likable.
He is. Like his, I don't know what, this is going to sound really weird, but I don't know what they did to his face, but he just seemed more approachable this way.
Like, that's a messed up thing to say, but I get it.
Thank you. Thank you. It's interesting that way because, like, you look at him and he's like, hey, and he looks like a cool guy that you just, Mark Ruffalo seems like the kind of meek, mild, like, hey, yeah, you know, I'm...
Well, that's probably because, like, he's been stuck with the Hulk for so long that he's just afraid of being around people and getting mad about whatever, and then, like, the Hulk comes to smash everyone's face in. Like, I'd be kind of meek, too.
Yeah. And we get a great bunch of, like, awesome scenes with all of them. Like, they're trying to figure out the time travel aspect, and they try to send Scott back, and instead of sending him back, they actually turn him young, old, and then into a baby and back to Scott, and it's like this, it was this huge little like Abbott and Costello type of routine how it worked out ultimately, because it's funny because Scott's like, I think somebody peed in my pants. And
yeah, I mean, they're not the whole, well, most of the film has a darkness to it. Like, it has a dark undertone because Eddie, as you mentioned, when they first get to Thanos on his garden planet, he has destroyed the stones.
Yeah.
So their original plan to bring everybody back is not going to work. It's, they have no tools to do it with. And so then, you know, they have this, you know, depressing 5-year gap that we don't get to see any of. We just see the aftermath is they're all kind of haggard and weary and still not sure, but still like desperate to find a solution. And now they have an option, but in spite of the darkness, there's still a lot of humor in the story.
Yeah.
And they really play up to the comedic strengths of their ensemble.
Yeah.
To pull it off all the way through, including obviously Paul Rudd.
Yeah.
Including Mark Ruffalo as Professor Hulk, who's super likable and funny, and like, I see this as an absolute win after he's brought 4 different versions of Scott Lang back from the van. But then also the big reveal in the first act, I think, is Thor.
Yes. Yeah. Which, so they obviously have to bring back the whole gang, and Thor is on what is now known as New Asgard, because if you follow the events at the end of Ragnarok, Asgard, as it were, was destroyed.
Totally.
By Surtur. So they've placed all of what's left of the Asgardians on some coastal area. They didn't really say where it was at. Just
It was Tongsberg, the city where the Red Skull took the Tesseract from the church building in the first Avenger.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
When did they say that? That's a
It's
lot.
On the sign.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
The same sign that says New Asgard says, you know, I don't know how to pronounce it, but Tongsberg.
Gotcha. Okay.
So well, it, that it's makes sense. It's a nod to a place that we've seen from a different era in another movie.
Gotcha. Well, they go and Thor does not come out of his house as often. You hear from Valkyrie, who is telling Hulk as well as Rocket, who have come to see Thor, like, he doesn't come down. He only comes down for quote unquote supplies, nodding over to a bunch of kegs that are sitting in the corner. So they go up there and they go to see Thor, and you find not just Thor, but you see chubby Thor. Like, you see a fat Thor, in all honesty, he's got the chin, he's got the man gut.
He's got the moobs. He's got the beer gut. He's got the extended love handles.
He does. And you first see him from behind. Like, you don't see him head on, and it's like, oh, this is Thor. Okay. That's not right. And it ultimately leads to a lot of recognizing, like, oh, he's going through some emotional stuff here. He's having a little bit of a hard time processing because he got whooped by, well, he got whooped by Thanos first, and then his job, which was to protect the realm and protect everybody else, he felt like was a failure because he didn't stop the snap. And it's very interesting to see Thor, or Chris Hemsworth, play a very non-confident Thor.
Well, and we've seen before the bravado.
Yes.
Like, we
from the very beginning.
In the beginning of the Thor saga cycle of the movies, this is almost like he's reverted.
Yes.
Certainly, even that Thor wasn't like, you know, fat and lazy and totally, you know, withdrawn from everything. But
yeah.
But psychologically, demeanor-wise, we've seen a version of this before. It's just worse now because yes. He bears the weight of failure and he's hiding from it, really. I mean, like, oh, yeah. he's refusing to acknowledge in some ways that it happened. Thanos is a name that they don't say in New Asgard, even though ultimately he was the one that cut off his head. He just did it too late.
Yeah.
You know, to save anybody. So he can't hear the name. Like, he tears up and whatever. But the interesting thing with that scene, what I really loved about it was you've got Chris Hemsworth exercising his comedic chops and, you know, with the help of some full body prosthetic, you know, work. But they do, it's counterbalanced with mainly Hulk reaching out as a concerned friend.
Yeah.
And partially also Rocket. Because Rocket and Thor developed a bit of a deep
camaraderie,
friendship and camaraderie in Infinity War that was very refreshing, unexpected, unique to the MCU as opposed to the comics universe.
Mm-hmm.
And so now you've got these two guys who've been friends of Thor in different ways at different periods of his recent life going, number one, to recruit him, but also, more importantly, to try to give him a way to find success again, to redeem himself, and to get out of the pit that he's fallen into. And you've got the comedy of him, you know, almost, you know, faux arrogance, you know, resisting it, but then the sincerity of the two of them. It's a really smart counterbalance, and the fact that both Hulk and Rocket are CGI characters, essentially, but the real emotion and depth of concern is coming from those characters. Also, I think from a visual effects standpoint is a high watermark in terms of subtlety and nuance. Yeah. You know, I thought it was a really incredible, very full scene, even though on the surface, it's just kind of funny. Like, what? Yeah. He's fat and depressed and whatever, but like, there's so much more going on there. And they handle both parts of that, both sides of that coin very, very well.
Yeah. Because ultimately, I mean, yes, the fat suit, him getting larger, him being, you know, like very lackadaisical, very much like, oh, yeah, you want to fix the cable, you know, kind of thing. Yes, that's meant for laughs. And it's peppered well throughout the scene itself. Like, it's not like consistently one thing and then that's just like, and we're on the downslope of just all the emotions. It's peppered throughout to where it doesn't become stale. Like, it's like, oh, this is just a really hard moment and I just have to really watch this. And like, it's serious, silly, serious. Like, the whole Fortnite interjection, like, Thor, it's nuking whatever some guy that, so what is his name, Korg, is sitting on the couch playing Fortnite on the TV, and Korg tells Thor that this guy who's been picking on Korg in Fortnite is back. So Thor grabs the headphone. He's like, hey, nuking whatever, nuke whatever. This is Thor, God of Thunder. Yes, I'm going to come over there and whatever and kick your butt, whatever, something. And
rip off your arms and shove them up your butt.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, go ahead and cry to your father.
Exactly.
Right? Because he's yelling at a kid over the headset.
But, like, that was funny. And that came right after one of the first times that Hulk is really trying to come across to him. And you're right. There are scenes in there that are, like, the emotional range is all over the place. But, like, the sincerity of him hearing the word Thanos that probably he hadn't heard in a long time and the fear it brought to him and how it made him just ultimately become overly emotional, it was a powerful scene altogether.
Totally.
Very well balanced.
And the only reason that they got him to participate in the time heist then was because Rocket said, there's beer on the ship.
That's literally how it goes.
What got him out.
So, obviously, we get Thor back into the gang, which this movie is filled with so many time travel jokes and Lebowski jokes. Like the Big Lebowski, because he looks like the Big Lebowski.
Especially when he has those sunglasses on.
He's got those sunglasses on, this large sweater. He's got the long hair, the long beard. And it's not even like, well, like his hair doesn't look neat or well taken care of. It's all like in tangles and it's got all these. He looks like the dude. Ultimately, all he needed was a white Russian and he would have been the dude. Essentially.
Totally.
But they're getting everybody together. Natasha finds Clint, who had just annihilated the entire Yakuza,
yeah,
which was pretty.
They gone.
Yeah, gone. And that also was another emotional scene where Natasha's like, we found something. We think we may be able to bring everybody back. And Clint turns around and is like, don't. And she's like, don't what? He's like, don't give me hope. And she's getting tears in her eyes. And she's like, I wish I could have brought you hope sooner.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like you feel you begin to recreate the foundation of why they are such a great, not just team, but a pair of friends. And that's what the movie does really well for that dynamic. They're like, we want you to see this isn't just like a relationship. They're not just working partners. They are family. They are friends and family, and everybody means so much to each other. And that
And his wife and kids knew her, like who she actually was, not just like a work friend. Like she was an aunt to them, essentially.
Yeah.
So she lost people that she considered family also.
Yeah.
No. But it's just the whole sequence of the film leading up to the time heist.
Yeah.
Has so much pathos. Like there's so much feeling in there. People who thought, oh, I'm going to cry at the end or whatever. You easily can hear sniffles far earlier in this movie than you expect.
Gosh.
This movie was ridiculous. If you're trying not to cry through this movie, good luck.
This is the new try not. This is the new try not to cry challenge. So obviously we get the whole team back together. The band is brought back together, and they essentially decide they're going to go in different parts of time to find where the stones are currently at that point in time, and find a way to take them so that they could use them.
One thing that we skipped is that Tony becomes involved with them again. So he kind of, in his spare time, figures out time travel.
In his spare time.
And then he confers with his wife, Pepper, and he's like, I can give it up. I can put it in a box and forget about it right now. And she says, but would you be able to rest?
Yeah.
Like, she knows him. She's like, the one thing I have not succeeded in doing is getting you
to slow down.
Like, off of... this path, this mission that he sets out on in Iron Man 1.
Yep.
And so she essentially co-signs and endorses, like, yep, you should keep going with this. You should go back to your teammates and do whatever. So he does.
Yeah.
And so between what Tony's figured out and what the quantum realm, you know, knowledge of Scott Lang, limited though it is, you know, how they can put those together, this is their mechanism for the time heist, which is to go back and take the stones from the past, bring them into the new present, and fix things now, and then return the stones back to when they took them.
Exactly. Which it's really well established or explained, because at one point in time, they decide they're going to go in three groups. One's going to go back to New York during the actual
invasion. Yeah,
exactly. And there's like actually three teams there. One's going to go and visit Bleecker Street to go find Stephen Strange. One's going to go and retrieve the staff or the spear, and the other one's going to go grab the Tesseract. And so Hulk is the one who has to go and see Stephen Strange, but he's not there yet. And the Ancient One, played by Tilda Swinton, is, and him thinking that it's going to be an easy smash and grab for the Hulk, reaches out to try to take it, and she knocks the astral self out of the Hulk of, you know, Bruce Banner, and she's like, let's try this again to have a conversation. But she explains it really well. Like, there's this whole stream of time, and if you remove these things, you're going to create branches. And if you create branches, then the future that you know will not happen, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, well, this is what we're going to do. We're going to take them, and then we're going to bring them back to the exact time that we took them and then put it back. And she's like, oh. And then the whole revelation of, oh, well, if Stephen Strange gave it to you, then...
Yeah, she already, the past version of her already knows
who's Stephen Strange. Yeah, that he's going to be the Sorcerer Supreme. He's going to be the best of them all, is what she said. She's that.
Yeah, and that's a really cool touch to know that, like, she was already fully aware of it years before, you know, the Doctor Strange origin film events happened.
Which is interesting because I just saw... Because,
I mean, she's fighting the Chitauri also. She's up on the rooftop, like, slinging magic at him and blowing up their little hovercraft.
Which, it's interesting. I just saw Doctor Strange the other day, and I don't remember this part, but apparently the Ancient One actually kicks Doctor Strange out of the place. And she's like, oh, should I let him back in? And I'm like, huh, you knew who he was, and you still kicked him out. Is that, like, just an inferiority complex? Like... I'm better than him in this point because I kicked him out of the school. But that was just interesting. At the same time, you got where you already know where the spear as well as, or the scepter as well as the Tesseract is going to be because it's at the top of the Avengers Tower. And this great kind of comedic thing happens where you have Tony and Scott, Ant-Man, who are trying to infiltrate into the place. There's this whole run of like how Captain America's butt looks off in the suit.
Totally.
And Ant-Man's like, for all that matters, that's Captain America's butt, you know.
No, that's America.
Yeah.
Like, or that's America's behind.
That's America's butt. And, we get this great sequence where ultimately Captain America gets the spear.
Well, you learn that the S.H.I.E.L.D., like, Black Ops squad that you didn't meet in the films until Winter Soldier, that they were the ones sent to Avengers Tower to retrieve the scepter when the Avengers defeated Loki, retrieve the scepter and the Tesseract, mm-hmm. right? And so you see more of that story than we've ever seen before.
True, because that's also introducing, at an earlier time, much sooner than Winter Soldier, the Secretary, Robert Redford's character.
Yeah.
He also shows up in there. But essentially, the Spec Ops team, they're in the elevator. It looks very similar to Winter Soldier when Captain America got into this huge fight with all the guys. And Captain America does the worst thing that you could possibly imagine.
So smart.
What would you have him do otherwise?
Not say that.
What do you want him to say?
Do you have any idea how upset I am that Secret Empire is even still on the shelves? Like, I loathe that entire run. I just wish. So essentially, Cap tricks everybody into thinking that he is a Hydra agent by leaning forward. He's like, Secretary's got a, you know,
wants me to take control of the scepter. Yeah.
And they're like, well, I'm gonna have to call the Secretary. He's like, you don't have to do that, trust me. He leans forward and goes, Hail Hydra. And I'm like, No.
So smart.
I thought it was the smartest thing he's ever done.
Like, wicked genius.
That was very clever.
And then he
and
walks
quick.
Out. They don't challenge him at all. He walks out with the scepter with a smirk on his face.
And well deserved, too. I was like, that is some smooth stuff. Cap has learned how to do some stuff.
So the first time we saw the film, me and Chad saw it, there was a lot of people who were like, no, oh, whatever. We go and see it a second time with Spencer. Spencer brings a friend along, and I'm watching this one particular friend because I know this one particular friend, he has very unique opinions about comic books. And this was one of those ones that he was not very keen on. He didn't like it at all. So I knew he wasn't going to like this particular scene. So as soon as this scene happened, his friend decided to cuss out the screen in front of him and flip off the screen at the same time. And I'm like, yep, this is a man after my own heart. I will live vicariously through you, sir. Thank you very much. God bless you. Because it's just like, it's, I don't know. I wasn't a fan of that for that whole run. And to see him do that, that's just like, it's not so much a bad plot device. It wasn't a bad, like, way to do it. I just don't like remembering.
Yeah, he outsmarted them instead of outfighting them.
Yeah.
Did you want him to bring up the exact line from Winter Soldier? It's like, before we get started. And everyone's just confused. Oh, like, what are you talking about?
That would have been much better before we get started. And then it leads to the bigger altercation that you're really waiting for, which is Captain America future versus Captain America
present.
Can
I say, I just love that line of like the younger Captain America being like, I could do this all day. And the older one's like, I know.
That was so great. Like, everybody knows how many times he says that line. And to hear him, Captain America, future Captain America, is like, yeah, I know. It's like, I say it all the time. I know. That was so funny and hilarious. Like, seeing his future self fighting off his older self, and it was so fun. It turns into this big old brawl where they fall over the sides and they're falling down to the bottom floor, and it's great. And then there's a final comment about his butt still looking good. Mm-hmm. And so yeah,
this is not the Captain America that we've seen before. I mean, like, his more rough around the edges older self, you know, isn't fully jaded like most of the rest of them, but he definitely does have his saltiness now.
Yeah, and it totally shows. And mind you, it's not a bad thing. It just shows like an experienced Cap, somebody who has lived a life, which is totally cool.
Well, I kind of wish we could have gotten more of experienced salty Cap, because that would have been fun.
Yeah.
We also get the situation with future Tony Stark and Ant-Man, who are trying to get the Tesseract while they're leading him out the building, which is where we get the interaction between present Tony Stark and having Loki in binds, leading them out so that Thor could take him to Asgard. Now, I don't remember, it's never been mentioned, but it's interesting that the secretary tries to stop him there and try to keep them from going out the door. Like, I'm wondering what actually happened so that they could continue and Thor could take him out. Like,
in the real version of the timeline,
yeah.
How did they get past? Yeah.
Yeah, because that's really interesting to me. Or did, like, what's his name? One of the guys that was in the elevator with Captain America, did he, like, ring him in? Like, hey, something weird's happening. You should come down here. Like, I wonder how much that affected the timeline for that particular moment. But essentially, Tony tells Ant-Man to go into his little arc reactor and pull a pin to give him a heart arrhythmia or something
like
that.
Yeah, like a small arrhythmia, yeah.
That, which was crazy because Thor gets all excited and puts his hammer. He's like, let me draw something. Here, hold on. And he taps his hammer and gives him a joy. He's like, oh, it works. Oh, yeah.
I had no idea if it was going to work.
But all the while, you have the Hulk, who is coming down the stairs because he's too big to fit in
the
elevator.
Gosh, that's so great.
So many stairs.
So many stairs.
There's too many stairs.
He comes out of the stairwell, like, super pissed off.
But he does walk down the entire, all the
that
stairs.
That's the insane thing.
He doesn't,
like,
jump down. He doesn't go through the wall.
He jumped down.
He complains, and then he walks down the stairs anyway,
three
the whole
stairs.
Building.
Yeah, and he, when he gets to the bottom, he flings open the door, hits the future Tony Stark. He ends up dropping the Tesseract that they had just stolen. The Tesseract flies out of the briefcase. Loki sees it on the floor, picks it up. And Loki disappears.
He gone.
So, that obviously...
We have a runaway Loki from the past.
Which is interesting, because that's gonna play, I think, in the
Disney Plus
TV
series.
See, that
seems like that'd be a confusing thing to do. Because that's technically part of, like, this alternate reality.
It's true.
Well, and interestingly enough, because this group is in 2012 mm-hmm. in New York... But Thor and Rocket are assigned to Asgard in 2014. And when you see them first there, they sneak past the holding cell where Loki is flipping the cup thing upside down and whatever.
Yeah.
You know, like, so a version of Loki is there.
Yeah.
But how many Lokis do we have now?
As many as you make, like, see, that we need to go back and talk about the whole time travel mechanic, because that adds some complications to the movie that the movie, like, follows for a while until it becomes inconvenient for itself and then immediately drops it. And it's like this. So if we go back to, like, before they even start this whole time heist fiasco, they're in a meeting with, like, how does time travel even work? Because Ant-Man's just bringing up a whole bunch of references from Back to the Future about not talking to yourself and, like, avoiding
Back to the Future, Wrinkle in Time, anything with time.
Oh, gosh. Don Cheadle's, like...
It's like, where have you guys hear that?
Yeah, entertainment.
And then he
list.
Brings up, then he brings up Die Hard, and he's like, "Oh wait, never mind."
I was like, "Okay, well, I don't know about Die Hard." Anyway, so Professor Hulk and Nebula are all, like, saying time travel doesn't work that way. You can't go back into the past and change your future because you're in the past, and that's not how time travel works. Which is fine. Because that means whenever they go back to the past in this movie, they can't change anything because it's always going to be their past because it already happened in the past. But near the end of the movie,
I think you're confusing yourself, Spence.
No. it's just you don't normally talk about time in such a fashion. Near the end of the movie, though, like, they decide, maybe someone can actually stay in the past and change the past. Well, which is weird.
We'll get to that. We'll get to that, because I actually have a couple of opinions on that. But essentially, everybody's sent to different parts. Obviously, they mess up on the heist of the Tesseract, so Cap and Tony decide they have to go further back, which they don't have any return juice left, which are the pin particles. They only have enough to go to a place in time and then come back. So they're ultimately counting on Pym particles and the Tesseract being in one place in the future, or I mean, in the past,
further past,
further back, which we get this great
1970.
And we get this great touching, you know, opportunity to see Tony connecting with his dad, unbeknownst to him, and then you get Cap looking longingly at Agent Peggy Carter through a window, which is really cool. Cause
where we have another character spoil.
Yes.
Because for quite a while, there have been rumors that they're going to not only introduce Namor, but also introduce Captain Britain, who is, well, Captain America in England, kind of, but not really, but Brian Braddock. And she's talking to her other S.H.I.E.L.D. agent officer person, and she says something about Agent Braddock. So there's another little hint. Everything's done with intention.
It is.
Now, whether that's, I mean, that's 1970, so it's probably a different Braddock, but it's an intentional reference to something they've already said they intend to eventually get to.
So we get this great, they connect with them, or, well, Tony connects with his dad. Cap just gets to look longingly through the window at her like a creeper. And then they get back to the future. You go to the other side of the galaxy, where in 2014, Rocket, Nebula, and Hawkeye and Natasha go to 2014 over where...
Rocket's with Thor, so it's Rhodey, Nebula.
Sorry. Rhodey, Nebula. I'm sorry.
Hawkeye and Black Widow. Yeah.
You are right. You're right. And they go to Morag, which is where we get the beginning parts of the first Guardians of the Galaxy. Which is, it's great seeing it from another perspective, because that opening is really fun from the Guardians of the Galaxy. You got Star-Lord, played by Chris Pratt, doing the whole song and dance thing with...
Lip-syncing, yeah.
Yeah.
But you learn now it wasn't lip-syncing. He was actually singing out loud to music that only he can hear.
And Rhodey has a great line. He's like, So he's an idiot.
Nebula. Yeah.
Yeah. So they eventually just knock him out, cold cock him, and then they go and they grab the orb, essentially the Power Stone. All the while, you have Nebula in the current time frame of 2014, who I guess they all ran on the same Wi-Fi. I don't know. It's like Nebula.
That makes sense.
Nebula, both Nebulas ran on the same neural network and started getting information crisscrossed. And so Nebula shows Thanos this video that she has just pouring out of her head of her talking to Rhodey about other people looking for the stones. Thanos is like, oh, what's this? And decides to take her to his shop to see what all is happening, which you see the Black Order, and Ebony Maw is going through her memory, seeing that there's
the memory
two
of the older one. He's able to figure out very quickly that her network is interfacing with the network of a Nebula from the future.
Yeah.
And so they're cross-referencing any mention of the Infinity Stones, because 2014 Thanos hasn't retrieved any of the stones yet.
Yeah.
Minus the fact that he technically had the scepter to give to Loki in the first place.
Which, it's his fault that he didn't get it the first time. So, yeah. But you hear him talk about Morag, in the video that she shows him, like in the memory bank. And so he realizes, oh, well, that's where she's at. Can you access her? And Ma's like, yeah, I can. And she pretty much freezes the other one right when they're about to go back to the present time.
Yeah, I mean, here's your classic, like, oh, the version of the character that we left with is not the same as the version of the character who came back with us.
The old switcheroo.
And so it's this unanticipated traitor in your midst kind of thing.
Yeah.
So they get the stones. There's a whole thing with the Soul Stone, right, with Hawkeye and Black Widow.
Yes.
And very poignant, very touching. One of them doesn't return. Spoiler alert, it's her. And
yeah.
So everybody has a moment where, like, wait a minute, she gave her life intentionally so that they could see this through.
Exactly.
And then they've got to build like an Iron Man version of the gauntlet and figure out how to undust all the people who were dusted, but not change like the fact that Tony and Pepper had a daughter and what, like, they can't bring them back to 5 years ago.
Yeah.
They have to bring them back to the present now.
Yeah.
Which in my mind leads to a whole other series of questions, like, well, what about all the family members of the Yakuza that Clint killed, right? Like,
yeah,
they're going to come back to a reality where some of their people are dead, you know, because their depression or whatever took them down a bad path, and then somebody caught up with them, you know, within 5 years or whatever.
Yeah.
People who harm themselves or, you know, whatever. So some of the people who could potentially return to the 5 years in the future present are still going to go through a bunch of heartache because, well,
there's still people
the
missing.
Half that was left alive is not all alive anymore.
Right. That's very true. And so with everybody is wondering who is powerful enough out of the Avengers to wield the gauntlet so that they could bring everybody back, so they could will everyone back into existence. And, of course, Thor, wanting to rectify what he thought was a mistake, what he thought was his failure, jumps forward and is like, oh, I'll do it. What are we standing around for? And, you know, and ultimately, Thor is just in no shape or mental capacity to do anything other than drink at this time. So they're like, no. Look, we know you're mighty, but you're just not. No. And Hulk goes, you know, oh, I'll do it. Hulk being probably the strongest Avenger at that point in time there.
And well, and he references the fact, which is new information to us, that the energy put off by the Infinity Gauntlet when the snap happens, in both cases, it was primarily gamma radiation.
Gamma radiation.
Which is what made the Hulk, essentially. So he's probably the best suited to withstand it of anybody who's there.
Yeah.
Now, we did skip a quick bit, which is, again, to the family theme. Thor, in the past, has a really cool exchange with his mom, Freya,
right.
Renee Russo, where she totally calls him out. She knows that he's from the future. She sees all of it. She gives him some really great advice. And one thing that he does right before he and Rocket return to the future is he summons Mjolnir.
Yeah.
And is excited because it means he's still worthy. And then he brings it with him into the future. So now in the future, he has Mjolnir and Stormbreaker.
Yes. And that is super
and his
cool
gut.
And his gut. So you have them come back. What's really cool is to see, you know, the glove, which is all the CG, the great CG work. The glove forms itself around Hulk's hand. And when it finally forms and grabs hold, it does the whole thing that it did to Thanos. And it begins, like, you see all the power of the stone surging through his body. And in his most capable of moments, he causes the gauntlet to snap. And this kind of large usage of energy expels from the place. And everybody thinks, oh, it's worked. Everything's good. Everything's done. Unbeknownst to them, at the whole time, Traitor Nebula is opening a wormhole for Thanos and his entire fleet, armada. Which, I had a question. So, in my opinion, I don't know how they were able to get that armada through.
Yeah, that didn't make sense.
Like, I get the Pym particle aspect, but unless he had like some super scientists who were able to figure out how to create Pym particles and then have enough, not just for Thanos, but for Thanos's whole army to fit through that hole. I don't know.
Yeah, because it just made it seem like she was opening, like, you're opening a gateway, but I don't understand how she could have possibly have done that without more Pym particles, because like Steve and Tony had like a couple of extra, but I don't think that's going to be enough to like bring a ship through. I don't know.
That was one of my things. Like, I was just wondering, because they didn't technically have like the wristbands, which according to Tony Stark, it's like a time travel GPS. It helps you get to a certain point in time. Like, I don't know how they navigated through space and time to get to the exact moment of where Nebula was.
Well, when past Nebula gives herself a facelift, essentially, almost verbatim, to look like future Nebula, she presents the Pym particles to Thanos.
Yeah.
And gives them to him. So it's possible that they replicated them and, like, put them in the ship somehow.
Yeah.
And then she, you know, used the technology in the future to bring the ship through. It's not really explained. I don't know that they're going to get around to ever explaining it, because
probably not.
The point of it is, Thanos from the past is now here in the future, so Thanos is again a threat. His whole army is here.
Yep.
All the Black Order, all the Outriders, all the Leviathans and the ships and
the space monkeys, like, whatever those things were.
The Leviathan, yeah.
Oh, that's what those were. Okay.
Oh no, the Leviathans are the giant big manatee snake flying things. But yeah, the giant gorilla things and all of it. But it's all here. It's all bad. They raise the Avengers compound to the ground.
Oh, yeah.
With the Avengers inside.
Mm-hmm.
And then all the Avengers kind of have to regroup and fight.
Yeah. Which is where we get the scene from the most recent trailer where we see Thor, Captain America, and Iron Man walking out to a sitting Thanos.
Yep.
And I have to admit, this turns into one of the best fight scenes or fight sequences I have ever seen in any Marvel film.
I'm going to have a hard time talking through this because I want to just go watch it again. I want this entire battle sequence on a loop that just doesn't stop. It's so good.
And it's not like one of those things where it's like, you know what, I really liked it when he was doing it, but when he was fighting, it was kind of whatever. But Iron Man was cool. But no. Everybody was so incredible in this sequence, from Iron Man, you know, utilizing the power of Thor's both Stormbreaker and Mjolnir and like blasting it into
channeling
his back, and then using that to blast, you know, Thanos. And then you got Captain America who's fighting him off, and Thor who's, and then we get the most awesome instance in the entire sequence of probably what I've been waiting for since Age of Ultron.
Well, and first of all, Thor's about to go down.
Yes.
Thor summons Stormbreaker at one point, and Thanos rips Stormbreaker out of the air before it gets to Thor, and then is going to impale Thor in the chest, much like Thor did to future him, even though he doesn't know that's the way it went down.
Yes. And so you think Thor is beginning to summon Mjolnir wherever that went, and Mjolnir starts moving, and it starts going somewhere, and all of a sudden it hits Thanos in the head. And it flies back somewhere.
And stops in midair and then goes back backwards through the air.
And it lands right into the hands of Captain Freaking America.
Captain Freaking America.
That scene is just
so worthy.
Which is what Thor says. Thor's like, I knew it. I knew his stuff. You know, he's out of breath and bloody, but he's like excited just like the rest of everybody. I've never heard so many people cheer so loud in the theater for a single instance, not even for the end of the movie.
No.
But just for that particular
instance. That moment is so good.
Yes. And to see like the whole fight between Thanos and Captain America as he's wielding, mind you, not just
Captain
swinging
America
it around.
Combos with himself. He combos with himself.
And it's not even
against
like,
Thanos.
It's not even a matter of like just swinging it and like hoping it hits. He's using it like expertly. Like he's been secretly.
He summons lightning.
Yes.
Twice.
He practiced. Like
but
sometime,
how do you practice
Age
that?
Age of Ultron.
Like, how do you practice
he was
that?
On the roof of Stark Tower for practicing with Mjolnir.
It's insane.
He waited until Thor went to sleep and then he lifted it after all, right?
And mind you, yes. The battle does get intense, and he essentially gets what's left of his shield chopped down to pieces by Thanos.
Yeah, he gets whomped by Thanos.
But in that very moment, you see Captain America get up. He tightens the strap.
Oh,
he's
gosh.
Beaten. He's tired.
So
he's
good.
Ready to give up. And then you hear...
No. He stands against the entire army.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
He musters his courage. It's hopeless. And it's like this beautiful cinematic painting of one man against this alien army of death.
Yeah.
And he's going to do it. He's going to stand with a quarter of a shield against the entire army. And he's about to go. And then
he hears in the comms, on your left.
Well, he hears Cap. And then there's a pause. Everything stops.
Yeah.
Everything comes to a screeching halt. Crackling static. And then Cap. And then he's like registering whose voice it is.
Yeah.
Right? This is Sam. And he says, on your left.
Yep.
And then you see Doctor Strange's little gold portal thing opening up, and the theater goes bonkers.
You get Black Panther, Okoye, and Shuri.
Yeah.
Walk through the portal.
Yeah, Wakanda shows out first. Yeah. Oh, so good.
And then you begin to see all these portals just begin to open up all around. And then one of the portals you see open up and Doctor Strange walks through it. And he's got the Guardians with him. And then, of course, swinging in is Spider-Man.
And the theater goes crazy all over again. Like, it's like 2 minutes of hooting, hollering, screaming, crying. Like, it's everything that you wanted. And they have made you wait like 2 hours and 5 minutes by this point.
Yeah.
And you've waited so long.
But it is so worth it because in the background, you got Rhodey and Rocket who are trapped underneath. You have Clint who's trying to run for his life from the Outriders. You got Nebula and Gamora and Bad Nebula all trying to, you know, fight it out. And then you see this huge Ant-Man just emerge. He's got Rhodey and Rocket and everybody's there, and even Stephen Strange turns to Wong. He's like, "Is that everybody?" And Wong's like, "You want more?" Because you see this sea of just warriors, this whole
crew. You've
got
sorcerers, you've got marauders, you've got the Wakandans, you've got like all the dusted heroes are all there.
Everyone. Single one of them, and all you get the words everybody has been waiting to hear. Captain America looks over and he goes, Avengers.
First of all, he summons Mjolnir again.
That's right. He does. And then he goes, Avengers, assemble. And everybody goes nuts in the theater. Everybody is losing it. Everybody starts fighting. It's so incredible. Like you see this wall of Marvel heroes just running. And you see Ant-Man as huge as he can be in the background. Everybody that's flying. Spider-Man swinging through.
Valkyrie on her Pegasus.
Valkyrie on her Pegasus. Freaking A. This, we got to go. Let's stop the podcast now and go watch it.
Yeah, we're done. We're done.
But essentially, they're fighting them off. They're overwhelming them.
They do like, pass the football with the gauntlet.
With the
so
gauntlet.
Black Panther takes it and runs with it for a while. Spider-Man takes it.
flies on Valkyrie's horse with her, freaks out, and Thanos ultimately decides to have his ship, which is still hovering midair, rain fire on the entire battlefield. His people, their people, all people.
Yeah.
And it's just horrific. People could die all over again, and then something stops, and the guns turn toward the skies and start shooting into the distant, like, above the horizon, up into space.
Yeah.
And they're like, what are they firing at? And, of course, then you have the triumphant return of Captain Marvel.
Yep. She comes down, destroys their ship, destroys everything that's left of theirs, and comes down, and they get this great interaction of a beaten Peter, who, by the way, gets a chance to use the insta-kill mode.
Oh, gosh. So good.
Super cool.
So good.
And he's got a black eye. He's bleeding. And she goes, hey, kid. And I heard you got something for me. And he's like, here, I don't know how you're going to get through there. And all of a sudden, we get this great vision of every female superhero on screen at once. You got, you know, Captain Marvel. You got Okoye. You got Shuri. You got Hope Van Dyne. You got... Oh, my gosh. You got everybody.
Well, and you get Rescue.
Rescue.
Right.
Which is Pepper Potts. And you get Scarlet Witch, who appears as well. And it's like, it is so overwhelming. It's like everything that you've wanted to see in a Marvel battle, it's here.
There's so much in this battle sequence. I don't even know what the timestamp is on how long the battle lasts, but I want it to keep going because it's so fulfilling.
So ultimately,
Valkyrie slices open a Leviathan in midair with her sword on her Pegasus. I mean, it's bonkers.
It is so bonkers. It's so great. So to kind of fast forward a bit, so they're going to go and try to warp the whole entire army back through the time hole back to their time, but they're unable to. So what they end up doing is they realize that something has to be done. And Tony even asks Doctor Strange, he's like, you said you saw this one outcome out of all these other ones. It's like, is this it? And he's like, if I were to tell you, it's not going to happen. And ultimately, Tony sees the gauntlet. He begins fighting Thanos for it, and they start going at it. And then Thanos finally gets the gauntlet on, and he's like, I am inevitable. And he snaps his fingers, and you think all is lost, and just nothing happens. And you turn and look, and Tony had actually put the stones on his own Iron Man gauntlet, and everybody goes
that
nuts.
Sneaky nanotechnology.
And you see, as soon as the stones set, however, that it begins taking over his body, it begins to like really drain him, and he does the best thing that anybody could have asked, and he turns and he's like, well, I am Iron Man. And he snaps his fingers and destroys, dusts the entire Thanos army. And it's like, holy crap. He did it. And everybody gets excited. Like, everybody in the entire theater that we were in were screaming and yelling and hooting and hollering. And then they pan back to Tony. And Tony is just spent. He is really, really looking bad.
And getting worse.
Like and getting
it
worse.
It gets worse as the scene plays out.
Yes. Because when Bruce used the gauntlet, it actually pretty much messed up his entire right side. But he's a huge creature. He runs off of anger. Ultimately, Hulk has an unlimited source of energy due to the gamma radiation. Iron Man, Tony Stark, is just a human. But he uses it, the gauntlet, and it ultimately kills
him.
It's
fatal.
It is fatal. And we get this really touching scene with Tony and...
Rhodey and Peter and Pepper.
Which, it's interesting to me, and I'm wondering if you got the same vibe. I got a really strong, like, gladiator vibe in that moment of, like, when Pepper is, like...
Oh, yeah.
It's so beautiful and so... Like, there were people sobbing. Like, I know there were people crying in the second showing we saw, but on our Thursday night showing, there were people that were, like... sobbing behind us and probably in front of us and to the side of us
all over.
I was sobbing. I'm not going to lie. But like all these, all the feels were out as like you were seeing this person who started this entire franchise and he's slipping away and Pepper tells him like, we're going to be okay. And he
slips. You can rest.
You can rest. and we get the death of Tony Stark, Iron Man. And it's so emotional. Like, the whole scene just plays out so emotionally well. Like, you can feel this person as this, like, soldier, this warrior. The mission is done. He can rest now. He can go home. And if you were listening at the beginning of this episode, over an hour and a half into it, if you were listening at the beginning, the song that was playing, we had mentioned this plays at towards the end of the film. That song is actually the funeral music, or the farewell music, if you will, of Tony Stark, as Pepper, you know, sends out this, like, memorial thing with...
it's like a floral arrangement with his original
arc reactor,
personalized arc reactor she had memorialized for him already.
It says proof that Tony Stark actually has a heart or something along those lines. But you see this beautiful honoring by all the other heroes that are there,
who are all grouped into family groupings.
Yes.
By the way, which is a beautiful touch.
Yeah. All the way through, you even see the kid from Iron Man 3.
Mm-hmm.
Which I did not get in the theater. I was like, who's this rando?
Spencer. Yeah, no, a lot of people had that reaction. Well, they're like, wait a minute, who's that kid?
The kid got older. Like,
what was he supposed to do?
He doesn't look the same. It makes it hard to make that connection.
But, yeah, you know, you get this really touching moment between Clint and Wanda, Scarlet Witch. We're like, you know, I really wish there was some way I could tell her, let her know that we did it. And she mentions, like, oh, she knows. They both do. Mentioning both Natasha and Vision, who are not... Vision isn't in this film, so just so you know. And we get this last, you know, mission that has to be done, where all the stones have to be put back. And it's Hulk who's on the computer, and it's Captain America there, still holding on to Mjolnir.
Well, because that has to be returned also. It was taken from 2014, so it needs to be returned to 2014.
You got that, and you have, what am I missing? Oh, and then you got Bucky and Sam Wilson, the Falcon, and they're all there.
Yeah, kind of wishing Steve well on his, like, restore the timeline kind of mission that he's going to do on his own.
Yeah, and they ask him, like, how long is this going to take? And they're like, for Cap, as long as it takes, but for us, 5 seconds. And so he says goodbye, and then he does it, and he goes, and he's like, all right, 5, 4, 3, 2, does a countdown, and nothing. And Sam is, like, freaking out. He's like, well, fix it. Find out a way. What's going on? What's wrong? And then you see Bucky, who's looking off into the horizon towards somewhere, and he's like, Sam. And you see this older gentleman who's sitting on this bench, and he nods to him to go talk. And it's, spoiler alert, it is old man Cap. And Cap apparently went to the past and lived the life. He tells Sam, you know, because he calls Sam over. Sam goes over to talk to him and tells him, you know, I thought I'd get a little bit of that life that Tony talked about. And he's like, well, it's going to be sad not to have Captain America around anymore. And he's like, well, about that. And he pulls a shield over to the side. He opens up this bag and he's like, here, try it on. And Sam's like, what? And puts it on. He's like, how does it feel? He's like, not like, he's like, what do you say? Not like mine.
Like it belongs to someone else.
Yeah. And he's like, well, it doesn't. And Sam's like, thanks, Cap. And it's a beautiful thing. And he sees this ring and he's like, you want to tell us about that? Are you going to tell me about that? He's like, no, I don't think I will. And we get this flashback to where you hear this old, like, 40s type music and something, you know, it's coming up to a house and the camera pans up. And then you see Peggy and Steve Rogers dancing, and it's a very emotional time for them, and they're dancing, and they're like, oh, and then it fades out.
And you once again hear tons of sniffles in the theater.
It is so awesome. And I mean, this is the type of movie that you've been dreaming of. This is the type of movie that you're hoping to really see everything that you've been waiting for to see. And this film not only delivered on everything you've been hoping for, but even then some.
Which is really impressive.
It's beyond impressive. It's like, seriously, did they really just do all of that? Like, everything I was hoping for in Age of Ultron, everything I was hoping for in the first Avengers, everything I was hoping for in, like, just even just Captain America, the first Avenger. Like, there were things that I was thinking about. I was like, oh my gosh, that'd be so cool if they paid off of that. They paid off of that. And they did.
Yeah, that dance that they never got to do, they finally got to do. And interestingly enough, the song they're dancing to, it's been a long, long time, is the song that Fury plays in Steve Rogers' apartment in the Winter Soldier right before he gets shot from behind. It's the same song.
I didn't know
that.
So
we've already heard the song even.
Spencer, did you know that?
I did not know that.
Spencer, we didn't know that. But essentially, that's the movie. There's no mid-credit scene. So just in case you were wondering, like, oh, there has to be a mid-credit scene because nobody talked about it. Nope, there's no mid-credit scene.
No, but there's this beautiful, like, the original, like, the opening to the credits. And yes. I'm going to hop back to another thing after we do this. But it's, like, this beautiful, like, tribute to cinema. It's, like, the flickering, like, light of film projector onto a screen behind everybody's names. And then it starts going through your, you know, main star credits, like, actor credits. And they all have, like, scenes from all the different movies that they've been in, and then they have the main Avengers have these dramatic stand-up poses, and they show the actors like autographs come onto the screen, and super classy and very like less about being a comic book movie and more about making a statement about like this is why we love movies.
Yeah.
Like it's a movie statement, not a comic book movie statement. I thought it was really classy.
It was a really nice touch. And especially it honors like those, going back to what we were saying earlier, it honors those who have been a part of this journey for almost the full length of time. You know, you got people that have been in it for the last, like obviously Robert Downey Jr. is one of those ones who's been in it for the last 10 years, but people like, you know, Captain America, like people like Natasha or, you know, Scarlett Johansson, all the actors wise, all these characters who have been in it for the longest of times, all the way to see this whole story come to fruition and have the ending that it has and to be able to still honor them like that. That's really cool to me, you know, but wrapping that whole thing up as you get to the tail end of the credits. So there isn't an end credit scene, but there is something that they do really smart and really beautiful. And as the end credits are happening.
Well, before you get there, okay. I did want to point out one thing.
Yeah.
Because, number one, we still have Spider-Man Far From Home in our future, in our near future, July 2nd.
Very near future.
Which, technically, that film apparently closes out Phase 3.
Yeah.
So who knows what new information that film might have for us. But also, you get a sense of what's happening with some of the other characters, specifically the Guardians or Asgardians of the Galaxy, because Lebowski Thor has joined the Benatar crew.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that one a lot.
That's going
to
be interesting.
Also, Gamora from 2014 is the only known survivor from 2014 from Thanos' forces, and she's missing.
Yeah.
So she's probably going to factor into Volume 3 pretty heavily, the search for Gamora or whatever.
Yeah.
We've got... There's just so much that you could do. They're never going to necessarily need to, but what happened to Captain America as he was, you know, traversing the time stream, putting the stones back? Did 2012 Loki that stole the Tesseract actually escape the loop of causality and whatever? Who knows if we'll ever know.
Yeah.
He has a Disney Plus series coming, so maybe that's what that'll focus on or not. You know, I mean, there's a lot of, even as you're giving all of this closure, you're also opening up new possibilities.
Oh, totally. And this film doesn't, I mean, obviously the people who nitpick and whatnot, they're going to say, oh, well, there's a plot hole there. The thing is, it's not necessarily a plot hole. It's an opportunity to expand the story at that point. Mm. Obviously, yes, Loki's not there anymore. He, you know, escaped or whatever. That's an opportunity to continue that story. Like you were saying about Gamora, same thing. Even the whole idea of, I don't know if you guys saw it, but the Russo brothers had talked to MSN today and mentioned, because there's still a question as to like if Cap went back in time, doesn't he disrupt the time stream, the timeline? And they were like, well, or did he go into a whole different dimension? And they're like, well, that is the question, isn't it? And they're like, I think they actually admitted that it may actually be a different timeline.
Well, it would have to be, because that's how they set up all of the time travel in the movie.
How so?
That's what they explained during the whole time travel sequence, that you keep making alternate realities whenever you go backwards. That's what Tilda Swinton was talking about, too.
Yeah, but I'm saying, though, like, so it's a different, almost like a different dimension, like a different universe. I believe it's something to that effect.
Yeah, see, this is the problem I have with that end bit of the movie. Because, like, they can't have the story exactly the way they ended it. They can either put an old man Captain America on top of that pillar. It's like, I came back. I spent most of my life with Peggy Carter. That works fine. You could just not see him come back. That also works. But putting him over there on that lake, like, that just makes problems.
Yeah, I agree.
You could see it as problem, or you could see it as possibility.
No, that doesn't make any sense with the way time travel works, because that means they were wrong the whole time.
Who it doesn't wrong? Mean they were wrong. It means that there may be more stories to tell.
No, well, it's true. I think that's true, because, so, like I said, talking with, MSN talked to them, and they were like, you know, well, what about the way that ends and whatnot? And they're like, oh, well, no, it's not that it ends, you know, it doesn't end the way you think it does. And it's meant to where it's leaving it open-ended because of the fact that there's more story to tell there.
You know the story I want the most? What happened when Captain America went to Vormir in 2014 to return the Soul Stone and found the Red Skull guarding the place?
That's
what I want to know.
That's a story right there.
Okay. It says, if Cap were to go back into the past and live there, he would create a branched reality, Joe explained. The question then becomes, how is he back in this reality to give the shield away?
Because he was always there.
Hmm. Well,
seriously, by the third viewing of this movie, I was looking in the background to see if an aging Chris Evans was in the backgrounds of any of the scenes that were set in the past. Or the pseudo-present, you know, like, was old man Cap there the whole time?
Yeah. Because Joe goes, maybe there's a story there. There's a lot of layers built into this movie, and we spent 3 years thinking through it, so it's fun to talk about it and hopefully fill in the holes for people so they can understand what we're thinking.
Okay, but even if you did that, that's still a different Captain America.
I don't know.
No, it is. I'm sticking to my guns on this one. It doesn't work.
I don't know. But, I mean, all in all, this movie is one of those types of movies where it's like, yes, you can go on, and we can speculate, and maybe that'll be another episode for us because we're running long. But it's one of those episodes. It's one of those types of things where it's like, this movie is going to be viewed over and over and over, and people are going to spend so much time combing through it because there's so much stuff in it. Like, if you were to pick apart, like, okay, yes, there are certain elements of the time travel thing that doesn't necessarily make sense, but they've had 3 years. They've had so much time to think about it. It has to make sense at some point.
No, it doesn't.
Well, it does. Like, why would they do that? Why would they put so much effort and time into creating this beautiful and well thought out story and mess up on something as simple as anything that can be messed up by watching
just sort of say, eh, yeah. I'm going to throw up my hands and say, you know what? Internally, we've built enough narrative consistency to say, like, most people are not going to challenge it, and it's not going to be a sticking point.
Yeah.
Who love Back to the Future as much as Spencer does are going to dig a little deeper and maybe pick some things apart.
Yeah, but even like, so I was kind of like, while I was watching, I was like, this doesn't work, but okay, Cap deserves this.
So,
I mean, Karen Gillan, who plays Nebula, she just brought the whole concept over from Doctor Who, right? Just wibbly wobbly timey wimey. Like, eh, well, maybe, who knows? Just get over
That's
it.
That's why she was an authority. She's still this before. Wow.
So, outstanding moments for you guys. What were probably the most outstanding parts that you really, really enjoyed out of this film? Like, I know obviously the whole film is like a really great one, and that end sequence and battle sequence is one of those ones. But, like, I know for me, one of the better scenes that I really, really enjoyed was the the scene where Thor is actually having that real heart to heart with Freya. In all honesty, Rene Russo does not age. I'm just gonna be honest.
She's completely the same.
Yeah, like her skin complexion and everything, like she looks incredible. And I loved the dynamic of that conversation, because it's not like oh my god, you're from the future. It's like, oh, you're not the son that I know now. You're from the future. He's like, no, I'm not from the future. What are you talking about? That's not me. And she's like, I grew up with witches, boy. I know that. I know, you know, how this whole thing works. He's like, I'm from the future.
I'm totally from the future.
And he starts crying. But the whole conversation that they have, it really helps a lot of people just kind of bring together the mindset of like, yes, he's not perfect. He's human. He's just like everybody else. But that doesn't mean he has to stay that way in terms of like defeated. He can be who he is meant to be, like who he wants to be.
Well, and her advice, which is super poignant, is we all fail at what we're supposed to be.
Yeah.
But we can excel at who we are, you know, like who you actually are. As long as you're trying to be this ideal version of yourself, of course you're going to fail.
Exactly.
But that doesn't have to stop you from being the best version of who you are right now, right now.
Exactly. What about you, Chad? Outstanding moment for you or most memorable?
Oh, gosh.
It's really hard.
I mean,
I know.
Everything involving Captain America and Mjolnir, like everything about it was spot on. Also, in our last episode, 159, at the very end, we kind of started talking about what are some things we're looking forward to in Endgame, and I had said, just, I need him to say Avengers Assemble, and you've got like 30 Avengers because all the dusted ones are back.
Yeah.
I was way off on my numbers. I mean, he says Avengers Assemble, and there's like 400.
Yeah.
Like, between all the different support staff, army people, kind of, whatever.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, there are so many characters.
Yeah.
And it is so good.
It is.
Juicy good.
Because it's so satisfying. You have him, you know, say the word Avengers, and then you have him tease it in, what is that, Age of Ultron?
Yeah, the very, very end.
At the very end, he's like, Avengers. And then it cuts out, and then it goes to the credits. Everybody's like, oh, come on. And then you get to this point, and it's like, is he going to say it? He has to say it. And then he says it, and it's like not even like in the loudness of it, but just in the fact that he says it sent the entire theater into a roar.
Well, because he shouts Avengers, and then he quietly says Assemble, like this menacing, like, let's give them...
Give them hell.
Yeah. It's so good. It is so good. I'm like, if you want to wait, Disney, if you want to wait to release the Blu-ray, 3D, DVD, whatever, Voodoo, like download streaming until Christmas time, I'm fine with it. You best release those scenes
early. They already put up the pre-orders for it.
Oh, yeah. It's on Voodoo already.
The pre-order, but that's not the same as watching it.
I know, but the pre-order.
I want to watch those scenes now. If there's a theater out there who just shows the battle sequence, like from Hulk snapping through the battle, and that's all that I'm paying $12 for, I will pay you $12.
Well, because you're essentially paying
multiple
for a full-time movie, like what most movies are.
You got like a whole hour out of it.
Yeah.
You know, but I would pay for it multiple times just for that entire sequence. It's that good.
What about you, Spence?
This is such a really hard question. I think my favorite moments throughout the movie were just like individual character moments, like just really quotable lines from like pretty much everyone throughout the movie.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Cap saying I could do this all day. That was amazing. Tony giving a lackluster medic when he's like dying on the ground as the younger version of himself. Like there were so many good character moments in this movie. I just loved it.
I felt like your favorite moment had to be when they're trying to talk to the Hulk and Nebula about how time travel works and how they're throwing time travel movies. And then Scott Lang at that point just like, so Back to the Future is just BS. I felt like
that was a good one.
Because unbeknownst to our listeners, I don't know if you guys know this, but Spencer is a huge Back to the Future fan.
Huge.
Yeah.
So I figured that kind of resonated with you. But it's true. You're right. There are so many different opportunities in this movie to become like a brand new fan or to re-solidify like any fandom you had in this franchise, because it's just so great to see everything that we've wanted in this, whole entire saga. Saga seems to be the most appropriate word for it.
Totally.
I mean, it's just, I don't know. The only thing I can say about it after the fact is that I want to see it again. Excuse me, I got a burp.
Wow. He's that excited, folks.
I am that excited. I want to see it again. I mean, we paid the last couple of times to see it already, but I still want to see it again.
Not, I mean, literally not counting like drive time or standing in line or whatever. We've devoted 9 hours.
Oh, easily.
Already to the movie.
Easily.
Well, plus previews, you're looking at 10 hours already with 3 viewings.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, let's go ahead and, as we wrap up this conversation, let's go ahead and go around the table. Obviously, we're going to ask if the film passes or fails. It's just customary, guys. Don't kill me because I'm asking. And we're going to see how many monocles this the film is. So start with Spencer. Spencer, does the film pass or fail, and how many monocles?
Of course it's going to pass. Like, this question seems super redundant today. Like, it's going to pass, and it's going to get 5 out of 5. Like, there's just too much. Like, there's too much good stuff here to give it anything less than that. It's so well put together. There's just so many great character moments, and everything just gels together so well that even if you do have a complaint, it's like the most minor of complaints. Like, it was just
yeah,
bravo,
I mean,
really.
It's not a perfect film.
Yeah.
It's not a perfect story, but it's so incredibly good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Honestly, just a real quick interjection, because I was going through the notes. One of the things I probably wasn't too fond of was the cameo from Stan Lee. It was okay. It wasn't anything great. Like, I don't know, comparing it to, what do you call it, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, like, I feel like that was his true last great cameo.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was great to see him one last time. And that will always be the mindset that I hold with this film. But I think his cameo, it was a little short. It was kind of hokey, but it was okay. But in terms of, like, last ones, I don't think it was his best. So,
yeah.
So, because I want Chad to take this last one. So, I'm going to go next. The film passes, obviously, for me. It was an incredible film, incredible way to cap off a whole entire franchise after all these years. I loved it. I'm going to give it a 5 out of 5 as well, even though the Stan Lee thing, that's not a big thing to kind of demerit any kind of film like this. This movie has really set the tone for what future other filmmakers now have to look towards in terms of creating universes. I mean, the bar is now set so high, they have made a 10-year-long story end perfectly from beginning to end. Everything has been well thought out, everything has been considered, and I am actually now anxious to go back to the beginning, start back at the beginning again, going through Iron Man and going all the way through and ending with Endgame, because I feel like that's the best way to honor this movie again. So, 5 out of 5, stellar film. Take it away, Chip.
All right. So, I'm going to give the movie a pass. No surprises there. I think it merits an unprecedented monocle scoring. So, present me gives it 5. Past me gives it 5. And together we give it infinity monocles. Hats off to y'all.
This is what happens. This is what happens. Okay. Well, that about wraps up another awesome episode of The Filmlosophers. Remember, you can catch all of our previous episodes on our website at filmlosophers.com, and you can chat with us online on social media at facebook.com/filmlosophers or on Twitter at twitter.com/filmlosophy101. Let us know what you thought about the film, if you had a chance to see it. If you didn't, if you're looking forward to what the next phase has in store, let us know. We want to hear you. A couple upcoming weekend releases. You got 2019's El Chicano. You got
Nobody Cares.
The Intruder.
Nobody Cares.
You got Ugly Dolls.
Nobody Cares.
And you got Long Shot.
Nope. Go see Endgame.
And you can go see Endgame. Like we said, this was a great way. This film was a great opportunity to kind of see how coming together with even a company like Disney, putting out a film franchise that lasts the span of 10 years and not only creating consistency through that storytelling, but then giving fans an opportunity to not only lovingly see the cap of a franchise go really well, but also see the opportunity to give a farewell to a proper hero in the franchise. That was also great. So, needless to say, this movie is definitely going to be one that people will continue to watch over and over and over again. So, I know why. So, with all that said, and after all this time, from all of us here at the Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Chad.
I'm Spence.
Class dismissed.